Jeff, I believe that's the first time I have sung that Teach Me Thy Way. But that's a very good song. Very powerful words. And that's really the attitude. If we can maintain that throughout our lives, we're going to go to heaven. That's the humble, teachable spirit that the Lord is looking for. This is obviously, as I'm sure all of you know, Father's Day. If any of you kids have forgotten up to this point, you're in trouble. It is a day on which I have some mixed feelings, obviously. Proud of the four children that I have, and I think about the many blessings that I enjoy. But I also think about my father, who passed away 2.5 years ago. I guess as long as I am in my right mind, I'll always remember him taking that last breath. And this is also his birthday. He would have been 77 today. And I'll admit that sometimes I look at some of you brethren here who have already surpassed that age, and I think, why couldn't I have had my daddy that long? I do think about that from time to time. But here's a thought that I've had in recent years since my dad has passed away. And I'm not saying that I sit around just moaning and groaning about this, but I do think sometimes, I wonder if I shortened his years. Seriously. I can think of certain times, obviously, when I gave him more worry than he really deserved. And I think about that in connection with some instructions given in Hebrews concerning the congregation's responsibility toward elders. When he writes to the brethren there, he talks about how the elders rule over you, they watch out for your souls, and he says, let them do so with joy, and not with grief, for that would be unprofitable for you. In other words, brethren, make their job enjoyable. And so that's the admonition that I would give all of you children here today. Your parents rule over you. And they've got a heavy responsibility. Let them do so with joy, and not with grief. Really, that would be unprofitable for you. And you know what? If you let them do so with joy, you might just add a year or two to their life. Possibly, right? And so those are my Father's Day thoughts. But let's talk about something else in the lesson tonight. I want us to talk about a decision that is made by virtually everyone, especially men, and that is, what am I going to do for a living? What job am I going to get? It's a very important decision, isn't it? From a lot of standpoints, but we want to emphasize more than anything else tonight, the reason why it's such an important decision is because it can have a tremendous impact upon you spiritually. Not just you, but your spouse and all of your children. It really has a major impact. And so what we're going to do tonight is say, now before you take that job that you're considering very carefully, ask these questions. We're going to look at some questions that you need to consider. This is actually a lesson that I preached about, a little over 4 years ago. Some of you may recall it from that time. I thought it was something that needed to be repeated at this time. I've also had some requests from people who have been visiting the church's website to do something on this. And so I thought it would be good to have this sermon also available on the internet. So before you take that job, ask these questions. Now this first one's probably going to surprise you a little bit, especially since we're sort of emphasizing the spiritual angle tonight, and that is, how much does it pay? That's important. How much does it pay? Now, please, before we get started with this, we're not going to advocate greed tonight. We're not speaking of, as Proverbs warns about, overworking to be rich, but this is a heavy consideration. And really the angle from which we want to approach this is, it's important for men to especially ask this question. It's important for men to ask this question. Because really, And I believe we can all agree upon this. What is best, is when a man can make enough money where his wife does not have to work. Especially when the children are young. Is that not at least the optimum situation? Now, I've never preached, never taught that there's any prohibition in the Scripture as far as women working outside the home. But there's enough said for us to know that that is the best situation. Let's look at a few passages that describe the woman's role, just to make sure we are mindful of that. 1 Timothy chapter 2. 1 Timothy chapter 2. Beginning with verse 11. 1 Timothy 2, beginning in verse 11. Let a woman learn in silence with all submission. Now do not permit a woman to teach or to have authority over a man, but to be in silence. For Adam was formed first, then Eve. And Adam was not deceived, but the woman being deceived fell into transgression. Nevertheless, she will be saved in childbearing if they continue in faith, love, and holiness with self-control. The word childbearing obviously has more to do with bringing up children. It's not just the matter of physically bearing children. The word sort of connotes the whole idea of bringing up children. But obviously from reading this passage, that's her greatest role. That's the role that she should obviously take the most seriously. Look in chapter 5 and verse 14, still in 1 Timothy. Look at the instruction given to the younger widows here. I desire that the younger widows marry, bear children, manage the house. Give no opportunity to the adversary to speak reproachfully. And then one other passage, Titus chapter 2. Titus chapter 2, beginning in verse 3. The older women likewise, that they be reverent in behavior, not slanderers, not given to much wine, teachers of good things, that they admonish the young women to love their husbands, to love their children, to be discreet, chaste, homemakers, good, obedient to their own husbands, that the word of God may not be blasphemed. There is emphasis in every one of these passages on her role in the home. And so again, the optimum, the very best situation is when the man can make enough money where his wife does not have to work and she can fully concentrate on these duties at home and especially this matter of bringing up children. And it's something that I've already spoken to my two sons about and I hope they will take it very seriously. One of them's here tonight. I hope he's listening. I hope he does make enough where that this does not become a problem. Especially when those children are in those early years. And I don't want to leave the wrong impression with that. I don't want it to make it sound like, well, they're fine after that. Okay. Sometimes we speak of the formative years. Well, they're 14, 15, 16, 17. Those are still formative years. Okay. So I don't want anybody to get the wrong impression from anything that I've said tonight. So how much does it take? There's one question, obviously, that we need to carefully consider. Another question. How often will it require me to be away from home? Again, we're talking primarily here from the man's standpoint in this case. And when we ask this question, we're thinking in terms of, first of all, the hours that you may spend on the job. That would be time spent away from home. Or we could also mean this from the standpoint of how much traveling time will be alone, or will be involved, excuse me. In other words, bottom line, how much will you have to be away from your wife and children? You know, there's a lot of emphasis nowadays on quality time. And basically, what that's all about is people feeling guilty for the lack of time they're spending with their children, and so they've invented this whole concept of quality time. I don't get to spend much time with them, but I try to make it as meaningful as possible. Well, it doesn't take a Rhodes Scholar to figure out that they need quantity as well as quality. I don't know the magic number to put on this, but they need a lot of time around them. There's a good friend of mine that lives in Danville, Kentucky, Charlie Ellis. I'm sure he wouldn't mind me using his name, even when it's heard on the internet. He took a job a good number of years ago as a pharmaceutical salesman. And I'm not necessarily saying that everybody who's involved in that would have this particular problem, but he, I guess, sort of rose up in the company and took on kind of a management role with it, and he was gone just a lot. And he said what woke him up one day is that he was going to his daughter's bedrooms, and he was saying goodbye to them, and they just didn't even look up. There was no acknowledgement of bye, Daddy, or you know, I can't wait for you to get back. I mean, it was just sort of the ho-hum thing. They had just become so used to him being away. And he said he went and he talked to his employer that very day. He said, some things have got to change. I just can't forget it. And so we have to make sure that this consideration, again, how much is too much? I don't know that I have enough wisdom to put any kind of number upon that. But we got to know that this can be a problem. We got to plan in such a way that it doesn't become a problem. There are some men who are away so much, their job involves being or having so many hours or so much traveling that they never could even think about becoming an elder or a deacon. Or they may not ever even be able to teach a Bible class very regularly. I'm just too caught up in all this. And so, they're not really able to reach their full potential in the kingdom. They're not able to make the impact that they could in the kingdom because of all this time spent away from home. It's important for us to notice that the admonition given in Ephesians 6 and verse 4 about bringing children up in the training and admonition of the Lord, it's addressed to fathers. Now, we all know that mothers have a tremendous role in this. We've just read earlier three different passages that emphasize her role in bringing up the children. But the admonition is directed to fathers. So they've got to take the lead in it. They've got to make sure that it gets done and that they're the one doing it a lot of the times. And it's hard to take the lead in this if we're away from home too often times. So how often will it require me to be away from home is a big question. Another question, sort of along the same line, how often will I have to uproot my family? How often will I have to uproot my family? Now again, when we get into the finer details of this, there's obviously going to be some judgment involved. And I'm not at all tonight trying to lay down the law as far as this is the exact plan that you've got to follow. You can only move this number of years apart. I can't do that. But there are certain things upon which we can all agree, and that is most children flourish. Most children flourish when there is some stability in their life. Can we not all agree on that? It's hard for them to flourish when there's the ever-changing environment and where I'm living and the people I'm around, and that changes all the time. It's hard for children. Maybe another way to express this is it's awful hard to mature when you're always adjusting. It's hard for someone to keep maturing when they're having to stop and adjust all the time. And again, I believe we can observe children enough to know that. And I'll tell you, a group of people who do not give very much thought to this, and that is preachers. Now, there's a lot of considerations that go into when I should move, where I should go, and that kind of thing. Yes, there's a sense in which preachers need to be looking for where they can do the most good and where I can be the most helpful and so forth, they got to think about their families, the impact that it's going to have upon their wives and children. And sometimes with all of this uprooting, you may find yourself in a place where the local church is so weak. And again, have there been success stories with this? Absolutely. There have been families who have moved to places where the local church was very weak, and guess what? They made it better. They made it better. And we're very appreciative of all those people who have. But you know, sometimes your children can be in various situations. They can, you know, their spiritual maturity can vary from time to time. They can be kind of in a little bit of trouble at times, doing a little bit better at other times. And boy, you take them somewhere where the church is pretty weak, and it can have a big impact upon them. So again, we can't lay down any absolutes here as far as exactly the plan you've got to follow. But we have to ask this question. We have to think about the impact that it will have on the entire family spiritually. How often will I have to uproot my family? Another very important question. Will I have to miss the services of the church? How often will I have to miss the services of the church? I think we're all pretty familiar with this passage in Hebrews 10 and verse 25. Not forsaking the assembling of ourselves together. And I know the mindset is, well, at least though, if we can just make sure that we're there on Sunday. I can be there on Sunday morning, make sure that I worship on the Lord's Day, then I'll be fine if I have to miss these other services. You know, when you start heading down that road, you can put yourself in some trouble. All of these services are designed for your edification. You get a little bit stronger each time you go. And so, you start missing. Even if it's for work purposes, what we would consider something very legitimate, do that enough and you're certainly going to get weaker. I realize that depending on where you are, sometimes the job opportunities can be very limited. But can we not just say this right off the bat? Shift work is just not a good idea. Is it? Is shift work a good idea? Now, we know ahead of time that it's going to involve us missing a whole lot. And so, if we know that ahead of time, really, we're looking for something that's not going to involve shift work. In other words, a faithful Christian, somebody who's really conscientious about growing, is saying, okay, where can I work and be allowed to attend regularly all the time? Now again, I'm not naive. I know that in some cases opportunities are limited. Sometimes with the credentials that you have, that might even lessen your opportunities even more. But that's the outlook, at least, that we need to start with. Is where, what can I do that will allow me to go somewhere all the time? Nursing is a very popular profession. Now, again, depending on who you're working for and your exact situation, you might be able to work that out. But typically, that can be a situation that's going to take you away from your brethren in many occasions. Fireman, notable occupation. But think about how often that you're going to miss. Again, I'm not trying to come up with an exclusive list tonight. Here are the good ones. Here are the bad ones. I don't know that I've got enough wisdom to go down and pick out exactly what's right for everybody. But you will observe that in any given local church, those who are there service after service after service and who are actively engaged in those services, that those people tend to grow the most. They wind up getting the most involved. They mature the fastest. They do the most good. I mean, that's just the way it works out. And so it's very important to ask, how often will I have to miss services if I take this job? Another important question. How closely will it put me in fellowship with evil? Let's look at a passage in Ephesians chapter 5 and verse 11. This will establish the principle upon which this question is based. Ephesians chapter 5 and verse 11. And have no fellowship with the unfruitful works of darkness, but rather expose them or reprove them. Obviously, there could be jobs that would pretty much put us in fellowship with evil, or at least mighty, mighty close to it. Too close for comfort, that is. Situation, and I talked about this several years ago when I mentioned, or when I preached this lesson before. There was a problem in a church here in the state of Alabama. Back several years ago, there was a man who was being considered to become an elder. And perhaps this should have been an issue before all of this arose, that is, his possibility of becoming an elder. But this man coached and taught at a Catholic high school. Well, there were some brethren who raised some objections to that. And I believe they were right. Any objections that they raised. Unless there's something that I'm missing, the basic purpose of a Catholic school is to advance Catholic doctrine. I mean, that's pretty much what it's all about. And they're pretty active in doing so. And it's just really, really hard for a Christian to be in that environment, to be a supporter of a school like that, to be one of its employees, to be right there in the forefront, especially being the football coach and be sort of out there in front of a school that is all about advancing Catholic doctrine. Now, I say all about, obviously they're involved in education of their children, they're teaching them reading, writing, and arithmetic, okay? But they're wanting to get across these things. And so, would that be something that you would want to be involved in? Look at 2 John chapter 1. Just as the one chapter. 2 John chapter 1. And again, the situation that I've just described is not exactly like the one that's described in this passage, but let's not make sure we see the principle here. 2 John 1, beginning with verse 9, whoever transgresses and does not abide in the doctrine of Christ does not have God. He who abides in the doctrine of Christ has both the Father and the Son. If anyone comes to you and does not bring this doctrine, do not receive him into your house nor greet him. For he who greets him shares in his evil deeds. And so we don't really want to be put in any position where we're in support of false doctrine. Now again, if you confronted this man, do you believe any of this? Well, of course not. He would obviously teach against these things. But that's mighty close, isn't it? He's not actively fellowshipping evil, but that's a little too close for comfort, at least. Now I know that you could take this principle and go way too far with it. Let's suppose you're working for some large company, and you're one of its hourly workers. In other words, you're kind of down there on the totem pole pretty much. Well, the corporate people, let's say they do, from time to time, some shady things. Like a lot of corporations do. So, well, I can't work there. Well, again, that's a little further removed than the situation just got. I don't know exactly where to draw the line. We could get to the point, I suppose, where, we would just have a few little jobs that we could do if we went too far with this. But it is a question we have to ask based on the principles here. We just don't want to be in a position where we're supporting anything, or at least it be perceived that way by others. Another principle we want us to look at, and Stone read really a little bit more than what we're going to look at right here, but look in 2 Corinthians 6 in verse 14.
And we have to make sure that we ask the same questions that are asked here in relationship to our occupation. 2 Corinthians 6 and verse 14. Do not be unequally yoked together with unbelievers. For what fellowship has righteousness with lawlessness? And what communion has light with darkness? Again, sometimes it can be difficult to tell exactly how much relationship we have with it. I was thinking about it, and I think I mentioned this in a sermon several years ago. There's a couple of guys on the radio in the morning, a couple of guys do a local show here in Montgomery, a sports talk radio show, and I listen to it sometimes. I eventually kind of get tired of the ranting and all, but the sponsor of the show is Budweiser. It's called the Budweiser Morning Line. Now, let's suppose that I was going to be involved in doing that show, and in the way I conducted the show, I kept everything clean, and there was no profanity, and it was just a good discussion about sports every day. It'd be awful hard as we go into every break saying, this is the Budweiser Sporting Line, or Sports Line. just can't be doing that, right? And so there's a lot of jobs where, and maybe we're not even drinkers, maybe we're opposed to that, but you see how that's way too close to it. We're putting too much support for something like that in the situation. So we've got to make sure that we weigh all of that when we're considering an occupation. Another question. Will I be providing the means for someone to commit sin? Will I be providing the means for someone to commit sin? I think of King Manasseh as someone who did exactly that. And we won't go and read that entire passage, but if you're familiar with Manasseh's life, you'll kind of know what I'm talking about here. Manasseh made it much easier for the people to commit sin. Idolatry in particular. He set up altars all over the place. An image of this and an image of that and an altar here and an altar there. And he didn't make them worship those things, but he made it a whole lot easier for them. He provided them ample means to commit sin. And certainly there are occupations where you can do the very same thing. How about working in a convenience store? Convenience stores pretty much survive on selling what? They don't survive on selling little Debbie cakes. Okay, they sell them, because I've bought some, bought too many of them before. They survive on beer and cigarettes. In other words, you're going to be handing over to people pretty much your entire shift. Here's your beer, here's your cigarettes, just over and over. Now that's not really what a Christian ought to be involved in. And the same would go for working in a restaurant. So, well, I'm just the server. I'm talking about those that would serve alcohol. That doesn't mean that I'm in favor of it, but can I really go and put something in front of someone that might cause them to harm someone else, maybe harm themselves later, harm someone else? Well, it's just one drink. How many drinks did they have before they even came in there? And so, to me, it would be inconceivable for a Christian to even think about wanting to do something like that. You know, going back to the convenience store, you're not only selling the cigarettes and alcohol. You know, one of the other things they push quite a bit, pornographic magazines. You used to have them hidden. You know, it was just hard to see them at all. Now they're, you know, pretty much in plain view, but, you know, they'll be happy to sell you if you want that. You work in a video store? Yeah, you'll rent a few nice Disney movies to people, but you'll also be renting a lot of smoke. You'll be handing over to them something that's going to feed their lust for appetites. You know, I'm giving some just, I guess, easy examples here, some very clear examples, but the question is here, will I be providing the means for somebody? Think about the occupation.
We sing the song sometimes. All you kids are very familiar with it, you young kids.
This little light of mine, I'm going to let it shine. It's hard for that light to shine doing the very things that I was talking about just a few minutes ago. And there are other occupations
where it would be hard for you to be involved in that and say, I'm letting my light shine. Will I be providing the means for someone to commit suicide?
One final question I want us to consider tonight is, will it expose me to constant temptations?
You remember the story of Lot, don't you? Pitching his tent toward Sodom. Now, there were some things in his favor about that area. Remember, Abraham gave him the choice. And he looked over there, and from a material standpoint, that was the best choice, right? He looked upon the well-watered plain of it. But he didn't think about the condition of those folks over there and what it would do to his family. Living in Sodom, you know, tending to his flocks and so forth over there, it got him and his family in a whole heap of trouble. And so, obviously, this is a question that has to be considered. Anybody thinking about becoming a politician? Getting involved in government, really pretty much at any level. Can you do that and be faithful to the Lord? Think about that before you answer. Can you be a politician and remain faithful to Jesus Christ? Maybe. On a real small level, but it's going to be extremely difficult. They're asked to compromise all the time. All the time. That's just the way of politics, is compromise.
It's just hard to stay true. Now think about how many people are going to vote for you. How many people you're going to infuriate. If you hold to your convictions about everything the Bible teaches on every issue, if you hold to those convictions, how many groups, how many large and powerful groups do you think you're going to infuriate if you hold fast to them? Now, you can keep silent. You don't have to bring up your convictions about all that, but then you've got another problem. Shouldn't I really be speaking out?
Any of you thinking about becoming a lawyer? I believe there are some areas of law where you could practice and it would be a lot easier on you than some other areas. But maybe an obvious example to bring up, do you really want to help someone get a divorce? Especially if it's not for a scriptural reason. Somebody just can't stand their husband or their wife any longer. They found somebody that looks a whole lot better. You're going to help them get a divorce. You're going to go through all that with them. And again, you know as well as I do, as much as there may be some reputable folks out there, it is an occupation that tends to encourage shadiness. Okay? And so, obviously, you're going to be exposed to some constant temptations. I remember last year, I believe, we were visiting with a family up in Bowling Green. We were staying with them while we were visiting Jake, and they were talking about a grandson of theirs that was involved with some musical group, and they were going around different places playing music. And from everything I can tell, the music was good and wholesome and so forth. That puts you in a lot of temptation, doesn't it? And I just said something to them about, well, you reckon he's thought much about kind of the temptations involved in that, maybe how difficult that could be, the situations that could put him in. And I think they said something to the effect that, yeah, we brought it up and we worry about it constantly. Again, that's a tough occupation, especially if you get very good at all. Where do people like to hear their music played? You might hear their music played in some pretty shady places. Okay. Again, there's a lot of folks in the music world that can drag you down. You're not exactly going to be, at least in most cases, around the most wholesome people in the world.
It may be something you're good at. It may be something you enjoy. But you know what? You can enjoy that for the rest of your life with yourself and with your family. There are outlets for that. There are avenues that you can explore with that that don't involve doing it for a living and putting yourself in situations where you're going to get yourself in a whole lot of trouble. Also, think about those who work constantly with someone other than their spouse. Boy, that can be a problem, can't it? Remember, Branson Williams told me several years ago, Branson preaches down at the County Line Church in Off, Alabama. And he told me about a situation where his boss had asked him to take some trip with another lady there in the office, and they were going to ride all the way together, and obviously they weren't going to stay in the same room together. They would book them different rooms, but he would just be with her pretty much all the time, except, you know, in the late nighttime hours. And I appreciate him very much. And he just took his boss aside and explained, you know, look, I'm a company man, and I want to do what's right, and I want to help and so forth, but that's not a good situation. I mean, that worries me from a spiritual standpoint. And he just talked his boss into making some other kind of arrangements than that. Now, I know Branson pretty well, not, you know, extremely well, but I feel like he could be trusted. And this woman may have been the most wholesome woman that ever lived on the face of the earth. But that puts you in a bad situation. And so there's a lot of ways we need to look at this particular question. Here's a principle we need to make sure that we observe. Proverbs 22 and verse 3, a prudent man foresees evil. Sees it ahead of time. A prudent man foresees evil and hides himself. The simple pass on and are punished. The simple-minded person just wades right in there and says, well, let's let come what may. I'll be all right. This won't bother me. We'll all be okay. This doesn't hurt, or it won't hurt me. And then he winds up in a whole lot of trouble. Now, the prudent man, the more careful man, the more discerning man says, wait a minute, hold on. This looks good, but I can see this causing some problems on down the road. I can see the temptations. I know myself, and I know what problems this can cause. And so I think I better do something with it. Will it expose me to constant temptations? You may be able to think of a whole bunch more questions to consider. But those are some very important ones upon which to base that decision of which job will I choose. Get out your song books. We'll sing the song of encouragement here in just a moment. If there's anyone here tonight that we can assist in making your life right with God, please let it be known tonight. You need to become a Christian tonight, pledge your service to Jesus Christ, be cleansed of all your sins. If you need to return to the Lord as an erring Christian, we're here to help you tonight. So please come as we stand and sing.